Good work.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to item 1164.
Accept the report developed by Stern Consulting LLC to assess the feasibility of implementing a 311 information system.
Commissioner Novick.
Colleagues, I'm pleased to bring you this report from Stern Consulting, which outlines a plan for implementing 311 here in Portland. 311 is a simple, easy-to-remember telephone number and website that connects people with government services, but it's more than just a phone number. It's a sophisticated software system that tracks where service requests are coming from, and how quickly and how well the city is responding to different types of requests. More than 80 local governments around the country have implemented 311, and many cities report that 311 has made a tremendous difference in citizen engagement and satisfaction with city government. To get a direct perspective on how 311 works in another place, I talked with Jay Strobel, the deputy city coordinator at the city of Minneapolis. Minneapolis launched a 311 call center 8 years ago and has been a leader in gathering information about how communities are using 311. A few points stand out from that conversation. First, Minneapolis emphasizes the huge improvement 311 has had for customer service. The person I spoke with explained that the city initially handled the person that they staffed 311 by transferring personnel from existing bureaus, which was difficult, but they said that ultimately people were convinced that that made sense. And he said that the city has realized significant efficiencies by having a consolidated customer service center. And this is something that they adopted before the recession, but I thought it was significant that they continue to invest in it in the post-recession era. In fact, they recently expanded their 311 hours to cover weekends, and they expanded their services to cover parks and tourism, which are separate organizations not included in their city government. So in Minneapolis, at least, has found that 311 works well enough to warrant not just continued but expanded investment. I also had a conversation with a city councilor in another city that remained nameless who said that as a city councilor, he found 311 great because he would ask how many 311 requests came from his district, and he would send follow-up letters to people asking, how did that 311 experience work for you? And of course, none of us would use the system for such crass political purposes. So where are we here in Portland? In 2012, under Commissioner Fritz's leadership, council passed a resolution stating the intention to implement 311 and then subsequently allocated resources for the report before us today. The report includes a recommendation for how the city should implement 311, including which bureaus should be included in an initial testing phase and where the call center should be administratively located within our city government. The report also includes initial cost estimates for the software, personnel, and other elements, as well as a projected return on investment. If the city chooses to proceed with implementation, actual costs will depend on the choices we make about the sophistication of the software, personnel transfers from existing bureaus to 311, the location of the call center facility, and other factors. The question before us today is whether we should accept this report. The question in next year's budget process may be whether we should allocate resources needed to begin implementation. With this in mind, I look forward to hearing the presentation from Spencer Stern and Lisa Turley. First, though, I'd like to ask Commissioner Fritz to provide any comments she may have at this point, since it was her leadership that has brought us to this point.
Thank you, Commissioner Novick, and I'm very pleased with both with the report and the fact that we're moving forward here. I've been participating in Portland politics and neighborhood activism since 1991, and it was under Commissioner Hales that the 823-4000 system was established, which really changed the way I, as a citizen activist, was able to interact with the city. And it was not long after that I discarded my paper directory and didn't bother looking up, even though I could look up, who I should be calling directly. I would just call 823-4000 and they would connect me. So I think it's significant that under Mayor Hales' leadership, as mayor, that we are considering an even better process with 311. And truly, it's a legacy project. And it's going to help our community get better service. It's going to help our staff provide better service without making it more difficult to do so. In fact, it will make it easier to do so. So it's a little scary, as are most changes. And I'm very pleased that we've had the consultant working with us on it and looking forward to hearing that and then continuing to move forward.
Welcome. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning. Lisa Turley, Director of the Bureau of Emergency Communications. Mayor and Council, thank you so much for your time this morning. I am pleased to be able to present to Council today the completed 311 assessment project. We have officially been working on this endeavor since July of 2014. And I would like to express my thanks to all the citizens who participated in our focus groups and to all city employees who gave input on this project. I'd especially like to thank the Executive Steering Committee, Laura Wolf, the BOEC Project Manager, Erica Nebel, and Katie Shriver in Commissioner Novick's office, and Commissioners Fritz and Novick for their expertise, leadership, and support. Without further ado, I will turn the presentation over to our consultant, Spencer Stern, who conducted the assessment for us.
Thank you, Lisa. Good morning. This is Spencer Stern from Stern Consulting. Thank you for the opportunity to present this morning. I also want to acknowledge, as Lisa did, the great work that Lisa Turley and Laura Wolf has done in this initiative as from a project management perspective. In addition, the support that we received from the City Council, as well as the Executive Steering Committee, and in particular folks from Commissioner Novick's offices, who have been done an incredible job of helping push this initiative forward. Also want to acknowledge my consulting partner, Jill Oregon, who has helped tremendously on this report. And with that, I'm going to jump into the PowerPoint. So one way to think about CRM and 311 is really a gateway to city services. Currently, there are, as Commissioner Fritz had acknowledged, currently there are more than 100-plus phone numbers to call in order to get city services, and that's very confusing for citizens. And one thing that 311 does is it provides a single gateway to the city to get information requests, to process service requests, making it much easier for the citizens to get the information, get the services that they need in a very timely manner. And one thing to emphasize with this type of service is it doesn't matter, you know, which department is responsible for fulfilling the service. We shouldn't expect our citizens to understand how city government, how the bureaucracy functions here. When they call the city, they're expecting information, they're expecting action. 311, in conjunction with CRM, customer relationship management software, can help foster that interaction. As Commissioner Novick has identified, there are a number of 311 implementations throughout the United States. And based on the results of these implementations throughout the United States, these are some of the drivers that the City of Portland can expect to achieve should they move forward with the initiative. In all instances, citizen satisfaction has gone up regarding the performance and the delivery of city services. These CRM systems are excellent in actually tracking citizen performance, too. Another key thing is staff and operational process efficiency. The City of Portland staff will be able to complete work more quickly, more efficiently, more accurately. In addition, the city will be able to track their performance as well as identify, you know, various areas where across bureaus information can be shared and service requests can be fulfilled. Another key benefit is the increase in customer responsiveness and field operations. There are a lot of CRM applications out there that are mobile enabled, so field personnel no longer have to go back to the office or have to communicate with a supervisor, et cetera, in order to get information. Through the mobility aspect of CRM systems, information is pushed out there to them in the field. They're out there, they act on it, they move forward with it. Data-driven decision-making, and this is something that Commissioner Novick had alluded to, but the reality is there is going to be a significant amount of data that's going to be collected through the CRM system. It's going to let the bureau directors, the elected officials, management and staff within the bureaus actually make decisions based on data as opposed to based on gut feelings and gut instincts. Another thing from a staffing perspective, and this is something Commissioner Novick had mentioned in his introduction, from a staffing perspective, there will be a lot of internal transition. You have a lot of very talented people here within the city. During our assessment work, many of them had expressed interest in being part of this 311 team, and we believe that from a staffing perspective, you will see your staffing levels remain the same or potentially even decrease because of the efficiencies.
Spencer, a question on that. I think that most bureaus, you know, here and in other cities probably recognize that their staff spends a bunch of time dealing with customer service issues, and there's probably a more efficient way to do it. On the other hand, giving up personnel is always hard. So it seems to me that in order to do this in a way that's acceptable to people, you probably have to do a lot of work analyzing exactly how much FTE time you are now using, which you might not really be tracking on customer service requests, in order for people to realize that it actually is justifiable to transfer FTE. So do you have examples from other cities as to how they've gone about that difficult process?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can speak to a couple cities that I've recently worked with. What these cities have done is they've kind of decomposed what the specific individuals who are processing calls right now, processing citizen calls, how much time they're spending doing that, but how much time they're spending doing other tasks that are unrelated to to fulfilling citizen requests. And by looking at how these specific individuals, how much time they're spending on customer intake and then other, you know, tasks, clerical tasks, et cetera, that do not have anything to do with customer intake, they're able to identify, you know, where they're spending all their time. And, you know, one of the interesting things is when you talk to people, when you interview them, they feel like they're spending so much time on the phone, so much time processing service requests, but the reality is it's actually significantly less than the amount of time that they feel that they're spending on it. So one of the reasons is that they feel that they're spending so much time is because there are some inefficiencies that are going on here because of the tools that are available, because of some of the processes may not be optimized. So what my experience has been when working with other municipalities is sometimes these people kind of self-identify and say that they're interested in being part of 311. And then if that's the case, you have to look at what they're currently doing in their department and to make sure that all of their tasks are being subsumed by somebody else. So a lot of times, you know, these people who are interested in being part of the 311 team, they're doing other work, but primarily they are spending a lot of time on the phone. So those phone calls and that work related to the phone call processing comes over with them, and then it's up to the specific bureau, if you will, to identify the tasks that are, you know, need to stay within the bureau and how those can be reallocated amongst existing staff. So moving back to the presentation, another benefit is of implementing the 311 system is we project, and the information is detailed in the white paper, that the cost, the long-term cost for the city for processing information and service requests, we believe will be decreased. So this next slide, I just want to kind of focus on the number one here. As part of our analysis, we did benchmarking. Portland, we looked at the seven cities with population right above Portland and the seven with population right below Portland. So a total of 15 cities, including the city of Portland. Portland is the only one, only comparably sized city that does not have a 311 CRM system and or a consolidated online service request processing. So your peer group has been doing this, and they have been getting significant benefits from doing 311. Number of phone numbers. One, the way that we are proposing that this be structured is the city will only need two phone numbers, 911 for emergency, 311 for non-emergency services. The number of CRM platforms that will be required. Currently, there's more than 10 different CRM platforms within the city, and all of those CRM platforms are requiring support from the Bureau of Technology Services, which is, again, a significant investment not only from the Bureau perspective, but also from the BTS perspective. The other thing I want to kind of emphasize on this slide is, based on our analysis, the fully loaded cost per minute of customer service representative time is $1. So every minute that a customer service representative is spending on the phone is costing the city of Portland $1. So if we can come up with a more efficient approach on how to handle customer service, it's going to save the city a significant amount of money. And just to kind of highlight that a little bit, within the soft launch departments that we've identified in the report, the current number of minutes, these are self-reported numbers, are about 1.3 million minutes per year. So just from a customer service perspective, that's $1.3 million that are being spent. A CRM tool in conjunction with the 311 telephone number put in place is going to significantly reduce the amount of money that the city has to spend processing information and service requests. The other number I want to kind of focus on here is less than $1. Based on the analysis that we've done, if you look at the cost, the incremental implementation cost, it's tough to say, will be less than $1 per year per resident for the city of Portland. So again, this is not a very expensive solution to move forward with. You know, if you look at the total population, less than $1 per resident per year would be the cost to move forward with this implementation. Other specific costs are, as Commissioner Novick identified, we did a return on investment analysis. The payback period we identify is 5.5 years from the point of implementation, and that turns out to an annual compounded return on investment analysis of 17%. Real quickly here, and this is detailed again in the white paper, these are the specific steps that we suggest the city move forward. And based on our analysis, this should probably, these five steps that we're listing here should take anywhere from 12 to 18 months to complete. The first step is project planning. We put together a detailed project plan. There have been already people within the city that have been identified, and a lot of people have showed interest in being part of this project team. The next step is developing the request for proposal. As Lisa had mentioned, there's a lot of very good software vendors out there. This is the opportunity to get them to respond to the city's specific requirements. The city does have a lot of very unique requirements, as we've uncovered during our process. There's a lot of very innovative software programs out there that we believe will be able to meet these requirements. The next phase is the vendor evaluation selection. This is where the vendors you bring the vendors on site, you see their on-site demos, you do reference checks, you potentially do more site visits. I know that the commissioner's done some site visits, Lisa and her team have done site visits. This is a very important step to make sure that you're making the right decision for the city. Spend the time, do the due diligence, see where it works, understand the pros and cons. Then after you select the vendor, the next step is the actual project implementation, training, cutover plans, setting up the various different environments, et cetera, and then the soft launch. And the soft launch is, as we have identified in the white paper, would be with the fire and rescue team, with BOAC, with BES, with PBOT, and with the INR line as part of ONI. Those would be the soft launch candidates. And just to kind of close this presentation, our perspective is 301 takes a lot of vision to do. And this is an old picture of the waterfront here. And back then, it was very functional, served its purpose. But there were several people within the city that said, you know what, we need to be innovative. We need to be visionary about this. We need to make this a destination. We need to beautify this. And at the time, it was very controversial, but you look at the results. And we feel the same way about 311, is that this is a very visionary type of service that will provide exceptional benefits to the staff, exceptional benefits from a performance perspective, and most importantly, it will have a very, very tangible impact on the citizens and how they interact with the city. And that's one of the reasons that we feel this is so important. And just to close, as I mentioned earlier, in order to contact the city right now, there's 100 plus phone numbers. In the future, two phone numbers, 311 and 911. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Spencer and Lisa, on the concept of a soft launch, if you are going to, we've talked about this before, but I think it's important to go over it, before council and in public. If you're telling the public there's this new number to call for everything that's not 911, it's 311, but you're doing a soft launch with a limited number of bureaus, how does that work? How does the messaging about there's this one new number work with you're only doing a limited number of bureaus to begin with?
Sure, that's a great question. So what happens is the bureaus that we identified as part of the soft launch team, the phone numbers that currently are in those bureaus are automatically re-trunked into the 311 phone center or contact center. So the citizen will still dial the same phone number. However, the call is getting routed directly into 311. The citizen will receive a different response from the customer service representative. The customer service representative is going to be using a different set of tools. So from the citizen's perspective, there's no difference. The hope is that eventually, instead of calling the old 10-digit phone number, that in the future they will call 311. And that's something that's going to be emphasized by the customer service representative. So it's very seamless to the citizen initially, because we feel very strongly that doing a soft launch is best for the city, because transitioning all the bureaus all at once could be challenging from a resource and financial perspective.
So anything to add to that?
And then eventually, once people start using the 311, then the number, you publicize it when the city's ready to publicize that we're now on 311. And the kind of opposite happens. The call goes into 311, and then if it's not a participating bureau, it goes back out to the if the customer service rep can't handle it, then they transfer it out to the bureau that hasn't transitioned yet.
But based on our analysis, the organizations that we identified as part of the soft launch are some of the highest call intake bureaus within the city. So we are, as Lisa said, some of that stuff will happen, but a large majority of the calls are going to be able to be successfully addressed by the 301 call center.
Thank you.
So might want to get you both to look ahead a little bit to the other end of that period. So we've gone through the soft launch, we've gone through transition, we're doing this. I'm optimistic and enthusiastic, but I want to raise the perennial worry, which is, government invests in efficiency move and doesn't end up being more efficient. You know, we've seen that story, or we've heard that allegation. So how do we avoid that situation here? Namely, how do we assure that the efficiencies are captured? I'm really looking more for advice for the five of us as leaders and chief executives of bureaus. Obviously, we both have the challenge of our form of government where bureaus report to multiple chief executives, and the classic problem, which is that when a big organization spends money and creates a new system, it doesn't always make the personnel changes necessary to achieve the efficiencies. So how do we make sure that we don't just end up creating more overhead positions, spend a lot of money on new equipment, maybe give our citizens a better customer experience, but don't end up being more efficient than we are today?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's an excellent question. One thing that we've done in this analysis is we've done a very good job of capturing the current state of performance. Call volumes, number of requests that are coming through other channels such as walk-in or email or web self-service. So we do have a good understanding of where our baseline is today. And how you measure the tangible financial impact is, you know, on a post-launch basis, you look at these same metrics 6, 12, 18 months out and see how have those changed. One of the key benefits of this type of system is that you can process for example, mobile and web self-service requests can be processed much more quickly, much more efficiently, much less expensively than an in-person interaction or even a telephone interaction. So because we have identified these metrics up front and we can see, you know, on a post, you know, 6-12 months out, we can do a comparative analysis and identify what the savings are. In addition, one thing that we recommended in our white paper is to do a business process reengineering. Now, we've done a little bit of that up front as part of this assessment. It wasn't part of the scope, but we did look at it a little bit. And we have identified a lot of specific processes within the soft launch department, within the soft launch bureaus, that can be optimized through the use of the CRM system. So another thing that we recommended as part of the project planning is to do a current state process mapping and try to identify what the cost of delivery of the actual services are. And then on a post-launch basis, 6, 12, 18 months out, whatever metric the city decides to pursue, go back and look at what those same costs are. And by doing the before and after analysis, you'd be able to identify the tangible financial impact on the city.
Okay, good. Thank you. So we have to watch, you know, both that change management process and remember the baseline numbers we started with.
That's absolutely correct, and that's part of our report. But one of the things that we've identified by having this initiative start in Bureau of Emergency Management Communication, there is a lot of energy there. There's a lot of resources, and there's a lot of talent to be able to drive these types of initiatives as a component of this overall project.
And Mayor Hales, I want to emphasize that the Office of Neighborhood Involvement under your leadership has been working very closely on this project and will be integrally involved in that. Also, you mentioned the commission form of government and the five executives. Neither of my bureaus are in the first phase, so I suggested to the consultants that we add my office and Jasmine Watt, my constituent services specialist, as part of that trial period or that first launch, so that we, as the five of us, see how is it going to work within a commission form of government.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
A couple of comments. First, I think this discussion about how do you measure success is very important, and we'll have a chance to do that at the front end. I'm reminded that when we made the pitch to move away from private security towards rangers in the Parks Bureau, one of the questions we were asked was, will there be the same volume of arrests made by rangers, right, the old model? And the answer was, I sure hope not. If we're going upstream and intervening without necessity of turning it into a law enforcement thing, we have to redefine what success looks like if upstream we're avoiding kinds of confrontations that sometimes lead to arrests. We're using
persuasion and relationship building and sort of tools of community engagement, not just the law enforcement hand. To the mayor's point about, you know, efficiencies and costs, we may end up finding that we serve more people because currently people don't feel they can be heard. So, you know, a quarter of the eligible people in our community that are eligible for legal services are now being served. If we had our way, we'd bump it to a half, but that would cost more money. So, I mean, we would not be saying we've saved money. We'd be saying we're spending more money to address more needs. So defining those parameters up front and benchmarks is going to be very important. I guess I probably have the only – I have one of the bureaus that is that it's harder to define how it fits within this, and that's the Water Bureau. And partly because the Water Bureau has 933,000 customers spread out well beyond the geographic boundaries of Portland, and it has some unique customer service issues. Now, tomorrow we're going to get a report from a Blue Ribbon Commission that's going to suggest a new system of oversight for the utilities. If the council ends up embracing those recommendations, we should have fairly soon a new body that we can then present your findings to and get citizen feedback on this question. So I'm not, I kind of feel like we're going to get the benefit of another set of eyes. But let's just very briefly on the Water Bureau side, what are the challenges that you would anticipate bringing Water Bureau under the fold in light of the fact that it has over 900,000 customers and has some very particular kinds of issues that come up with the public? What are some of the challenges? I think I understand the opportunities, but what are some of the red flags that you would identify for us?
Actually, Commissioner Fish, maybe a follow-up on your question. I mean, a distinctive thing about the Water Bureau is that they actually send people the number to call like every 3 months. People get a bill from the Water Bureau and there's a number on it. So there's probably less concern about people don't know what number to call as opposed to like with the numerous numbers within PBOT where you only call when you have a problem and you have to figure out what number to call.
In fact, Steve, we've even pushed the envelope. We now just list Charlie's cell phone number. We use a picture, his name, and a cell phone number because we're trying to make it as accountable as possible with any concerns people have. So, your thoughts?
Yeah.
It works.
Mr. Commissioner, that's an excellent question. Our experience is that when municipalities have typically launched 301 call centers, water is typically not one of the initial bureaus or departments, and for several reasons. One is that there is the financial component of it. So CRM systems, the way they're structured, cannot handle the financial processing of transactions. So
you mean like issues with bills?
Correct.
Okay.
So there.
A few of those.
Yeah. So there. In the future, there's definitely integrations that can be built between the financial, the billing process, and the CRM system. But one of the things is because water has that component, and there are so many questions related specifically to billing and payments, et cetera, that it would be a much more significant change out of the gate to account for that. The second driver was within the water department, there does seem to be a comfort level using their current systems. They feel that it works well. So that was another, you know, issue that we looked at when we met with the personnel from the bureaus is we said, you know, is this something that would work for you, something you're excited about, et cetera? And with the bureaus that we identified to be part of the soft launch, you know, top to bottom, they said, yeah, give us. We want to be on this. We want to be part of the soft launch. We want to be the guinea pig, if you will. And we didn't hear that from water. And we think it's because it is a more complex approach to the interaction with the citizen. In addition, you know, there's a lot of institutional knowledge there, so it was difficult potentially for people to get their head around, you know, what the benefits are of it. So with our approach, we felt we wanted to have the greatest likelihood of success with the soft launch, and water is just very complicated and, you know, was not a fit out of the gate.
For phase one.
For phase one, and for the soft launch, correct.
I appreciate hearing that because the Bureau currently is embracing change and reforms, very fundamental. There's probably a point where there's a capacity question. And as we're trying to improve our monthly billing capacity, as we're working on the new oversight model, as we're partnering with Commissioner Fritz on reservoirs and on and on and on. There's probably a capacity question. But one thing I would be interested in knowing more about later is what has been the experience of other cities that have 311 and possibly have their own, you know, public utilities? Have they successfully integrated the Water Bureau into this system? And if so, or if not, what were some of the barriers? So that's for another conversation.
Sure, happy to. I could chat about it a little now or chat about it later. It's your call.
Let's hold on it since we're not part of the soft opening. And Lisa, one other thing. City currently invests in 211. County invests in 211. In my view, it's been hugely beneficial to have a one-stop place to go and get information about food, shelter, health care, everything else. Is this similar in a fundamental way, or is it different in a fundamental way?
They are similar in a fundamental way. The difference, all three of the 1-1s that we could be talking about, 211, 311, and 911, are the one-stop shop for a particular kind of business. And 211 is for social services and that kind of thing. 311 is for government provision of government services, and 911 is obviously public safety response. So that's the decision point the citizen would need to make, or the caller would need to make. Do I need social service? Do I need to talk to my government? Or do I need a police, fire, medical response?
And to piggyback off of Ms. Turley's comments, we did interview folks from the State of Oregon 211 agency, and they're very excited about the city considering this initiative because they are getting a lot of calls related to City of Portland issues, which is outside of their domain expertise, outside of their mission, outside of their purview. So, and they sometimes don't know where to direct these folks to. So they're excited to know that the city is looking forward, is considering this because it's going to make their job easier. It's going to be able to help them put their constituents in touch with people who can act on their behalf.
Thank you.
Great. Other questions for our team here?
Lisa, could you give your perspective for a couple of minutes about the suggestion that the from the report that 311 be located within BOEC?
Sure. I started pursuing this kind of a project back in 2006, in part because of the non-emergency call volume that BOEC was experiencing, and recognizing that we had issues finding enough staff to do the 911 piece and the expertise and the kind of person that it takes to be a 911 operator, and I needed to offload some of that volume. We continue to have that problem. We've gone from 25% non-emergency call volume to currently we're about 35%, which is way beyond our capacity, and our 911 service suffers for that. We do understand, my team understands how to provide calls, a major, large volume call center service. I think we have the connections with the infrastructure. We understand the technology. I have staff on my org chart who do technology to a point that BTS allows us to do that. I have language line contracts, language service contracts. I have a training department that could retool to do this kind of major, like large-scale training. So for me, I've always seen it as another arm. It provides me an opportunity, our bureau, an opportunity to have people come in as entry-level employees and learn really excellent customer service. And then if they choose to promote up into the 911 ranks and have a career ladder or not. It also provides, I think, we understand how to do metrics because of our CAD system, and this is just a different kind of computer kind of tracking of service requests, and so we understand what it takes to make that happen. So
I think to add to that, the involvement of John Dutt and his team at the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, that were what the report suggests is to create a new Bureau of Communications. So clearly there are, as you just said, Director Turley, 911 operators have a particular expertise, and that's in dispatching and getting to the right service provider as quickly as possible. The Office of Neighborhood Involvement has expertise in encouraging people to be engaged and in teaching them how to be engaged. And so it will be a new culture for this new bureau, combining the best of both and making sure that we don't lose either. The advantage, of course, to doing a combination is that, as you said, that the leadership is already in place, the support staff are in place, it doesn't duplicate, it reduces the overhead costs, and still gets the benefits of a combined system.
Absolutely, ONI is essential. The INR group is the core group of customer service that the city has right now. So to lose that knowledge base and that expertise would be ridiculous. I mean, we need to go forward with them.
Can I go back, Commissioner Fitch, to water for 1 second? Another factor that we looked at, and something you brought up, is that the water department's currently undergoing a significant amount of internal change. And that was another factor that we looked at in making the determination that they were not a great fit from the soft launch perspective, from a resource perspective, because they're going through so much change internally now. Adding a CRM system on top of that would strain the resources significantly. And in fact, as Commissioner Fritz had identified earlier during an opening remarks, one of the reasons we were very interested in having the Bureau of Development Services be part of the soft launch. However, they are going through a significant software implementation right now, and based on our conversations with the leadership there, they felt that they just didn't have the resources to be doing two types of software implementations at once. And that's one of the key things with the, as I said, with the soft launch, is you don't want to have those bureaus that are in there be overtaxed from a resource perspective. There's a finite amount of personnel that they have. So that was another driver to push water out, is from a staffing perspective with all the change that they're currently going through.
I very much appreciate you clarifying that, because again, my sense of the Water Bureau is they are embracing change and reform. But what you're pointing out is a question of bandwidth and timing. And I think that's an important distinction. So thank you.
Good discussion. Any further questions for our Bureau Director and our consultant? Thank you both. We might have questions for you at the end, but let's see if there are others that want to testify on this.
Thank you.
Yes, sorry. Okay. We have five people signed up.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Ben Pickering, Mark Jacobson, and Marianne Schwab.
Okay, on this item, Mr. Pickering. Go ahead. You can go first while they come up.
Benjamin H. Pickering, the 511, or is it 511 call?
311.
311 call. So what's the cost on that?
Well, not completely known yet, but there are some estimates of what it'll cost to build the system and then operate it. But like you said, it's hoped for that it will save us money.
Lovely. Because the 911 calls, I heard, it gets backed up. I mean, so if there's another additional call, they got the non-emergencies and the other phone calls, but there's always, I mean, if they got someone that answers calls for, like, I mean, anything that needs, you know, out of the ordinary, like, and he can answer questions. I mean, I like the fact that they should have more of people that sit there and answer calls and, like, just, you know, what needs help with and what's, you know, I mean, if they had a group that went out and provided the finances for a call where they go out on a scene and they'll be able to fix things, and it's like brought with kindness and with awesome standards of understanding what people are asking, not for their needs, but because it is politely to have things prosper. Proper with the concept. I mean, I mean, or even having a phone call where that you can call in and be like, ask them anything other than like the 911 calls. Yeah, it's a really big emergency. But if you have the 311 call, is that for like what kind of calls would that be for? Like, I mean, what's it?
Oh, it could be any number of things the city does, a park reservation, like, a pothole, you name it.
Oh, and so if they have, like, whatever they're thinking of, like, hey, there's stuff in the city that needs to be worked with. Yeah, and then you can call them and ask them, be like, hey, you know, you go one side of the city, and you got other people on the other side of the city, and you go, and everybody meets in the middle, and, like, you start with things that need to be fixed, and you go all the way to the middle, and all the way back, what needs to be fixed. I mean, that's just kind of, orally speaking, I mean, you can't do things overnight that fast, but like, like everybody all at once, one side of the city to Portland and all the way to the other side and back, what needs to be fixed, and you know, there ain't nothing else to argue about, but anyway, okay, I'm done. I'm good.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Ms. Schwab, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. You know, I got involved with
just give us your full name, Marianne.
Okay, Marianne Schwab, Sunnyside resident, and I have been monitoring the 311 need now for quite a while, as has Commissioner Fritz. My concern was when a neighbor called me, 90 years old, fearful of her adult son, and wanted a no trespass. Well, I went out to East Precinct, and I got a copy of the document to apply for one of those, and the information was on page, like, 18, what number to call. The 823, you went through a spiral, push this button, push this button, push that button. Nobody answers the phone from 501 to 751 on Monday morning. So then I called John Dutton. I says, what can we do to fix this? So a human being is there to answer the phone, whether it be an elder in fear or whether it be domestic violence. There's numerous reasons why we need this. I have read your report, the 23 pages. I have looked at the tables. I'm disappointed that I did attend one of those community meetings, and I read in this record 14 people from the general public attended. In my group in North Portland, there were five of us. The people that were there were totally confused as to what 311 would do. So if we're trying to get this out, and then I called John Dutt a few weeks ago and said, where's that report? Well, it's still in process, still in process. I was shocked Monday night to get a forward from Andrew Fay. She's very good at alerting Southeast Uplift 20 neighborhoods what's happening on the calendar. Late that afternoon, I learned that you were going to be rereading this today. I got a copy of the report. I called John. I said, how could I be blindsided on this when I signed a Rossiter? So if we have public involvement, it needs to start here. And Commissioner Novak, I have been on your street fees rosters. I have been on many of them. What happens to that information? We failed the public. You don't have many people here questioning this. So let's go back to getting people to answer the phone. And why do we need 4,800 square feet on Southwest Portland when we have all this equipment right here in Oney? Your staff, your gateway to all these services are excellent. And we could hire staff 24/7 right here. I would rather see these dollars spent in East Portland on their infrastructure. Let's think twice. Let's really study it. Because remember when you call your doctor's office? Your call is important to us. You're number six in queue. You can leave us your number. We'll call you back as soon as we're able. And maybe 24 hours later, maybe 48 hours later, you get a return call. Let's really study this. Does this really meet the needs of Portland? Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Have some others signed up, Carl?
The last two were Joe Walsh and Charles Johnson.
Okay, come on up. Where's Mr. Walsh?
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. The other day I called Social Security, and they have a similar system that you're thinking about putting in. And the word came back that they would call me back in an hour and a half. Just think about this. You're taking or offering a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. Right now, the city, as far as I know, is very responsive. When I call the city, and I often do, if I wanted something from the auditor's office or from the city council or from staff, they're very responsible of calling back, even if they're busy or they're not at their desk. So it seems to me that you're offering a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. And here's another problem that you're going to have. You're going to have this bottleneck at your 311 as the phone calls come in. Because if you have operators, and my understanding is you're thinking about 16 operators that would handle this kind of stuff and funnel the information to the right person, but you're also suggesting that you're going to be replacing hundreds of phone call numbers. So therefore, it's not 16 operators that can handle this kind of stuff. You're going to have phone calls coming in at a much faster rate than the 16 operators can handle it. So what do you do with that? Do you bounce it back and say, like the Social Security, well, I'll call you back in an hour and a half? I don't think so. I don't think on the local level you're going to get away with that. This is an expenditure on top of a system that is working. So that doesn't make any sense to this Brooklyn kid. You know, we're very fundamental. If it's working, leave it alone. And you have a system right now. If I call the water department, I get through. Or I talk to somebody. Or somebody calls me back. How are you going to increase the efficiency of that? If I call Commissioner Fritz's office, they will call me back or I get through to somebody. You have a good system going right now. Why would you mess with that? And I think Ben's question is a good question. How much is this going to cost? 16 operators, if you pay them reasonable amounts of money, is not chump change. You're getting into expensive stuff here. And you're creating another problem. The other problem that you may run into is if you look at the phone, the way they're set up, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, the 3 and the 9 are not that far away. So are people going to dial 911 instead of 311? Are you going to have that problem? With 211, it's in the middle. But 3 is right on top of the 9. So people are going to be dialing 911 and waiting for a response from somebody to answer the phone, and somebody's going to come on the phone from 311 and say, I'll call you back in an hour and a half. Tell that burglar
that
you're trying to call the police. Yes, sir.
I just want to let you know that if you went back to Brooklyn, you would find that 311 is already there because 311 is New York City's main source of government information and non-emergency services.
Thanks, Joe.
We have 600,000 people here. New York has 8 million.
Yeah, I think you've raised some good points. I think the one that we could probably figure out the quickest is, as the consultant said, the 14 cities that are about Portland size that they compared all have 311. So the dial pads work the same in Dallas.
Out of how many cities, Mayor?
Yeah. I don't know.
How many cities are there in the United States?
No, but my point is we can look at what their experience has been with misdialing because they've already tried that out for us.
Our point is very simple. You are creating a solution to a problem that doesn't exist.
I hear you on that. Thank you. Okay. Charles, welcome.
Good morning, Commissioners. Again, for the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and the guy from Stern Consulting might see that my technology that I bring to the desk is a little old, but I was actually surprised that we didn't get some broader conversation about platform as a service and some of the buzzwords, and also talking about some more concrete things. I haven't maybe looked as closely at these 23 pages as Ms. Marianne Schwab has, but I'm always disappointed when we have these presentations and we don't get very many concrete numbers. And I hope you will encourage presenters to say things like, the city currently pays CenturyLink X amount of dollars, and are we getting value for that service? Some of these are value-added services that you possibly should be getting for money that you're already spending if you were trying a little harder. Another issue that comes up is, although the scale is smaller since it's only servicing the city of Portland and not the state, but the state put out a request for proposal a couple years ago, and tens of millions of dollars went down a hole to build a Cover Oregon system. And while I trust you a little bit more than I trust the mechanisms that Governor Kitzhaber put into position, when you listen to what Mr. Walsh is saying and talking about providing services in a way that maybe isn't even expected by the citizens, that's an issue that you're going to have to look really closely at once these RFPs come in. I do appreciate that this is on the agenda, that we have a consultant's report, and we're able to come in and have citizens bring up this issue before you maybe even set the definition before the RFP goes out so that we can help influence you into critical things that, you know, I know sometimes you're worried some of the presenters might come up and physically slap you, and sometimes, you know, maybe they should. If you do something like set, like when you call your doctor and you hear the message, if this is a medical emergency, hang up and then dial 911. If you build a 311 system that does that, I may have to consider slapping you. What you need to have it do is, if this is, the thing needs to say, if this is an emergency and you meant to dial 911, press 1 now, not hang up and dial 911. That needs to be actually put in the RFP so that you won't get asinine things like when you call the doctor, they say, if it's an emergency, hang up and then push 3 buttons instead of just push 1 button. So thank you for bringing this forward at the level of not being looking at RFPs. We'll still, as you can see, citizens have concerns, and we'll be in contact with your offices after we snoop around and find out how this compares to what you're paying for CenturyLink and how it ties in with other infrastructure services that are being developed here, like Google Fiber, and the risk of having this in the cloud versus the advantages of having distributed infrastructure at multiple sites that the city owns. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else?
Okay.
All right, Mary Ann Schwab.
What I heard is 211 gets lost and doesn't know where to put the person. They too should have a number one, go into 823-4000. The fact that this is part of our system and they don't know who to call, let's think about this 311. Let's really, really take it apart with a pickle fork. I don't trust consultants at this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions? Any further questions for staff or consultant? Then let's take a roll call, please, on the report.
And a motion.
A motion to accept.
Move to adopt the report.
Second. Roll call, please.
Novick.
Thank you, Mr. Stern and Lisa, for the presentation. Thanks to my colleagues for their engagement, and thanks to the people who commented. This is something that would not be easy to do. I think that the most difficult and essential part is it's not cost-effective unless you actually do staff 311 with existing personnel, at least for the most part. And that means going through the difficult process of bureaus identifying how much personnel time they currently spend dealing with customer service requests and making the call that, yes, actually, it is worth it to us to shift over some FTE in order to deal with these calls in a more efficient way. So I'm very encouraged by the experience that other cities have had with it. I think that they've generally found that the citizens really, really appreciate it. As I said, Minneapolis has even expanded their hours and their services recently. But I think that the in addition to coming up with money for the software, which is money we would be out of pocket, and that, of course, competes against all sorts of other requests, the toughest thing is going to be having conversations with our bureaus and figuring out how much FTE really should be reallocated. And that's a discussion I look forward to having with my bureaus. And it's obviously essential for all of us to do that in order to figure out how to make this work in a cost-effective way. I do want to follow up on the thought that, I mean, some of the people that might be most positively affected by having 311 would be the constituent services people in our own offices. So I would, if we do go ahead and do this, I think that they would be very engaged participants in the 311 process. Aye.
But today we're simply voting on accepting the report, and I do so enthusiastically. I'm very pleased with the work that's been done in partnership with Commissioner Novick and his staff. Soon the council will decide in the budget process whether to move forward with the next steps in actually implementing the system. And it will take the political will of council, participation of our labor partners, and cooperation of every bureau leader to make it successful. I believe this is long overdue. It's crucial to the future success of the city. We're falling behind other comparable municipalities. Over 80 cities throughout the United States have successfully implemented a 311 system. My former colleague, Commissioner Randy Leonard, said when we passed the resolution back in October of 2012 that 911 faced significant resistance when it was being proposed, but can you imagine not having a 911 system? Mm-hmm. I believe that in a few years we'll have the same reaction to thinking back to the days before 311. to address those who are concerned and who say that the current system works well. Well, as I said, it's a tribute to former Commissioner Mayor Hales and the staff in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement that the 823-4000 works so well, and indeed, Commissioner Novick, to the constituent services staff in each of our offices. It's not really good use of a commissioner's time to be telling folks where they can get their permit for XYZ, and that happens a lot in my email box. So we need to help our citizens who don't know who to ask how to get services in a much more equitable and efficient manner. And indeed, as Director Charlie said, we need to provide translation services. We need to provide services after between 8 o'clock in the morning and 5 o'clock in the evening, as Marianne Schwab said. And the 311 system will enable us to do that. Thank you to Commissioner Novick and his staff, especially Katie Shriver and Erica Niebel, Lisa Turley and Laura Wolf in the Office of Emergency Communications, Bureau of Emergency Communications have been amazing. John Dutt in the Office of Neighborhood Involvement and the entire team on the information referral specialists who continue to amaze me with how excellent they are. I will say, though, that in terms of their best efforts, my record as a community activist was 6 different phone calls. After they sent me to the first person, there were 6 hops of people saying, no, you need to talk to so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so. There were 6 hops before I eventually realized that I was going down in a completely wrong path, called 823-4000 back, and was sent down a different path, which got to the right answer almost immediately. So that's an example of most people don't have time to call 6 different people to find the, and then to know to call back to 823-4000. The advantages to this 311 system, the information, the request gets entered into the system on the computer. So if it ends up at the wrong person's box, they then forward it to the right person's box, and it continues to be tracked so that the city staff know that it's gotten held up somewhere. So that there's much more accountability to this system. It really reacts. It's a 21st century system rather than cobbling together great people who work really hard to get citizens their answers, and we can do better. Thank you to Stern Consulting for their excellent report and to staff from the city who've served on the steering committee, including Tim Crail from my office. Aye.
Commissioner, as you were thanking a list of people I neglected to thank, it occurred to me that another group of people I neglected to thank are the 123 city employees who filled out surveys and the 78 people who sat through interviews as part of this process. So thank them as well.
That's great.
Fish?
I want to thank Commissioner Fritz and Novick for their leadership in exploring this innovative idea. I want to thank Steve's office and Lisa for the briefing that I got recently, which was very comprehensive. I'm pleased to accept this report and to begin to take this concept and turn it into reality. Bye.
Hales.
Yeah, thank you, colleagues, for good work on this. We have, as you said, Commissioner Fritz, cobbled together really good work out of the system that we have now, thanks mainly to the people involved. So it's a management question, and that's why I raised that classic issue with Lisa and with Mr. Stern. That is, you can do this in a way that makes it better or not, and that's the challenge. But it'll be actually one of the things I'm going to do in terms of following up on this assessment is I know some of the mayors of some of those other 14 cities, and I haven't had that conversation yet with, say, Mayor Rawlings from Dallas, but they're on the list. So how'd that work for them? What are some of the perils and opportunities as they went through this transition? So this is an excellent assessment, but that's what it is. It's not an appropriation. It's not an irrevocable decision. It's an assessment that says, here's where we are. Here's what we need to do. Here's a good estimate of what it will cost. So I think it's very useful information. It does give us the navigation to make a big turn. Got to make it the right way. So far, so good. Thank you for good work. Aye. Okay.